Hello and welcome again to Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang, with me as always is Nathan. It is late Sunday night, and fates have conspired that we were unable to get a podcast together on short notice. Nathan was murdering Bambi, and I was
and
drinking
his mom.
Scotch
I actually
did you kill two?
I'm very good at winging them and hitting trees and dirt and stuff, but I did get two eventually.
There you go.
You know, and it's funny because I actually got a less than 1 year old buck and like a really old doe. So that's why even when my mom asks, like, did you get Bambi? I'm like, and his mom.
Awesome. There's a bit about that in this week's Supernatural, which you haven't watched yet, but you'll laugh when you get to that part. We do have a bonus episode that we are going to cut into after a few minutes here, but we decided to start this episode off by reading some viewer emails really quickly and, kind of do a little bit of that as we have been detached from the viewer emails for a little while here, considering that we've been doing like the Necron stuff and Dreadfleet and a lot of other things that kind of don't give us the time to sit down and do them. And we do definitely appreciate all of the email that we get from people. So I'm just going to go ahead and jump right into one that we got from Mr. Chris Jenkins. It's got a warning about this is rated R, 18 strong language, which I get so strange when people say that at the beginning of emails. Because if you listen to this show, we don't give a fuck. Nobody cares. And then his next little caveat is this may not make sense as the writer was drunk and raging at the time of dictation. You know what? Well, I've said that so many times myself.
You know that. Isn't that your email signature at work? Like, seriously.
Oh, if only. Hey, guys, Chris here. I've been a long-time victim of Games Workshop. Damn price raises. And these are all in brackets. That's the rant for another time. And recently, I have noticed a horrible trend. They let Mad Ward near writing equipment. The man single-handedly ruined 40K for me with the Grey Knights, and now he's laid his hand on my book, the Necron / Tomb Kings in Space. That's their name now. Now I'm unable to fucking look at them. I don't think GW has ever had a man so contemptuously disregard the fluff of other writers to a point where the Catan, the one race / faction winning in 40K, is now slaves to the race they tricked into becoming the coolest army ever. I've now decided to stop bailing and jump off of this sinking ship that is 40K and move on to fantasy. My questions are bullet pointed for drunken reading, which is hilarious because he did that after a paragraph of doing exactly what we say not to do.
Hey, they can't all be winners, but at least he got to bullet points. So,
he remembered
you know,
at one point. So bullet point number one, do you think Matt Ward has an almost iron grip on 40K? Nathan?
At this point, hell yes. I mean, you look at it, and the dude has written more codexes. Or I think he's written as many codexes in 40K 5th edition as all other writers combined.
Yep.
You know, so it's just like you look at it, and of course he has. The guy has basically single-handedly shaped the entire metagame of it, because if you look at all of the most popular codexes when it comes to player base and tournaments, he's written all of them but one, and that's Guard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, actually, you know what? I'll give Phil Kelly some props with Wolves as well. But, I mean, the fact that he's done the Marine book, the Blood Angels book, the Grey Knights book, and now the Necrons book. I don't know how popular they're going to be on the tournament circuit, but, you know, because, I mean, they've been out for 2 weeks. It's hard to really get a thumb on that. But we'll see. I mean, the guy has single-handedly shaped the metagame, you know, and if you're a fan of his work, first of all, you know, send us an email, because I'd love to know if there is one of you so I can flame you on the podcast. Hey-o. No, seriously, but it's just like, you know, some people love what Matt Ward has done, and they're Matt Ward apologists. I am definitely not one of them, but...
No.
No. Because what did I say? I'm just like, you know, Rob...
Oh, he cut out there for
an
a second.
Entire game
oh, you're
system.
Back. Hey! He cut out there for a second.
Yeah, well, I'm recording on my cell phone because that's how ghetto we are this week.
The funny thing is, like, it shows you logging in and out of Skype at the same time, which is pretty awesome. But okay, so I'm going to jump in here. I wouldn't necessarily say that Matt Ward has an iron grip on 40K as a whole, but I would definitely say that he's so entrenched in shaping the fluff and the direction of the game, and as Nathan has said, the metagame itself, which I think is very, very true, to the point where I just don't think that anyone at the GW head office is really pulling on the guy's leash. I think that they're just kind of letting him go, and he's just kind of mindlessly doing whatever he wants to do, and they're looking at sales, and they're saying, like, this is great, let's go this way, and let's continue to go this way, and, you know, and they've kind of decided to build it around of the way that he's writing books, and as you said, he's written more of them than anyone else, but I think that I would like to hear from people with exactly what Nathan had asked, which is, if anybody's really on the Matt Ward wagon, by all means, give us an email and let us know your point of view on this, because there are very, very few people out there who are on that side of the fence saying, like, no, this is great. Or they're just whores who love the fact that their Space Wolves got so good. Oh, Blood Angels are so good. Grey Knights are so good. Okay, yeah, so... Go ahead.
I just want one quick point to something you said, because you said, you know, people aren't really pulling on his leash, and I think that's true with all power armor armies, but, you know, with Necrons, it's completely different. Like, if I did not see the front page credit of that being a Matt Ward book, I wouldn't have believed it was him, other than all the retarded fluff. I mean, that reeks of Matt Ward. The whole, you know, what the drunken rant section of this email said was, you know, he completely disregarded everything that came before and just chose to rewrite what he wanted. And, well, you know, that I think is stupid, but and that reeks of Matt Ward. But like I said, when you look at a rules perspective, I mean, the Necron Codex doesn't even look like, you know, doesn't feel like it's from the same author as the Grey Knight book.
Yeah, we kind of talked about this in the last episode, but it does lead into the next question that he had asked, which is why I was trying to get ahead of you. How do you think the older, better Crud Ace writers would think of the new direction of the Necrons? And I think kind of what you said speaks to that, which is that I think that there's some influence in what he's doing by looking at some of the older writers and having to work off of what was already there for the Necrons, right? Like we said before, they've got such amazing fluff in the old codex that he can't depart from that utterly and completely. It's such a good foundation that even if he's writing shit on top of it, you know, it's like the Twilight novels, so I hear. You know, it's all derived.
Hey, didn't you make it like 2 pages in? Because you were like, yes. All right, I'll read it so I can make fun of it. And yes. You made 2 pages in.
It was 2 pages and I quit. No. What it was basically all of the Twilight novels are derived from vampires and other, you know, it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer and it's Interview with the Vampire. And it's all these things. It's all just this big derived story. And then, even when you're taking all that stuff from there, well, that's all good stuff. So what you're writing is still going to be kind of good, even if you're just essentially copying and pasting from another location. And then you get to the last book in the series, which is just utterly fucking insane. And that's when you've just utterly lost it. So I think if Matt Ward were to write another Necron Codex 5 years down the road, it would progressively get worse and worse and worse because he's slowly going away from what was so good. I think that that's what grounded him, because when you look at the Space Marines and you look at Blood Angels and you look at Space Wolves, they were already kind of stupid to begin with, but they were tolerable. You could stomach the Space Wolves, and then he got his hands on it and he's just making it worse with what he's doing. And I agreed. I think that the fluff and the direction of the Necron book is worse, but it's not terrible. And I think that that's maybe the reasoning for it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree on any points. Like, that, you know, that's the thing is you're right. The old Necron fluff was phenomenal. So when you do have that foundation, you can Stephanie Meyer it and still have something that people will enjoy.
Meyer. All right. So this last bullet point here is what is a good army in fantasy? I'm looking at Bretonnia, but I'm not sure.
Bretonnia.
What's that?
Like, that's, then play Bretonnia if you're looking at them, because that's the beauty of fantasy is, you know, it really is no terrible army. Like, you can build a list that is going to suit your style of play, and you can play games and you can have a blast and you can do very, very well with every single army there is. Now, obviously, some armies are going to be, I would say, easier to win with than others. I mean, more forgiving for whatever reason, but it's just like the key to fantasy is find something that you will enjoy painting, something that you will want to get finished and want to play with. So if you're currently looking at Bretonnia, pick up a fucking Bretonian army book and a box of knights and start going to town.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to. And I would give you two pieces of advice if you're looking at Bretonnia. Stick to the battle force, the army box, because you know that that's not going to change. So if you're picking up
Yes.
the army boxes, you're pretty much guaranteed that whatever you're going to be doing in there, it's still going to work in the new army. It's not going to change dramatically. Again, they are kind of up in the line of armies that do need a redux for 8th edition. So you know that they're on their way eventually. So just kind of keep that in mind as you're doing it. But I mean, they're still a pretty competitive army as far as I'm concerned. I got my ass handed to me with my lizard men at the Out of the Basement tournament. And, you know, it's just like they still have a lot of very, very good things. And they've got a couple of cool loopholes that you can have a lot of fun with. And of course, it's a gorgeous army. So I would say go for Bretonnia. Screw not being sure about it. You'll definitely enjoy that army as long as you enjoy painting horses.
And also, that was a really good point about the Battle Force box, because if you notice the last, what, four or five releases in a row of Games Workshop, they haven't replaced any existing plastic models. They only converted. So you do know that when Bretonnia get redone, and who knows when the timeline will be for that at Games Workshop, you're going to get new questing knights, new Grail knights, new unit, probably a gigantic hippogriff style monster, because
Like it.
that's the direction they're moving in. But they're not going to replace any of your current plastics. So your peasants, your men at arms, your knights of the
And two
realm slash
trebuchets.
knights errant. And two trebuchets. They're not plastic, but well, how can you go wrong with two
You can't go
fucking
wrong.
field trebuchets?
All right. So he says, keep up the entertaining work, I suppose. Wow. Great way to end the email.
Oh, I suppose. You know what? Forget everything we just said. Go fuck
He
yourself.
says, I suppose. And then there's an ellipses. No, good job, guys, and happy anniversary. P.S. Nathan, you complain like a motherfucker about your Tyranids because they had their rules ruined by he who shall not be named, which he named earlier. But at
Yeah,
least
he
your
did.
fluff wasn't Matt Warded. So point Lang. Well, you can't complain with a point for Lang. So let's answer another quick email here. Christopher Smith writes in. He says, "Hey guys, I just heard your bit on the 11th Company podcast, and I thought I'd stop by and say hi and to ask about that documentary. I've had no success finding it. I'm looking forward to hearing the show later, dudes." So this is apparently somebody who is listening to the 11th Company, which you and Terry were a guest on recently.
Along with Kyle, a frequent guest host, and you will hear more of Kyle later.
Yep, for sure. Because we are going to be moving into that bonus episode. But for anyone who is interested in getting a link to the 11th Company podcast, you can find it on our Facebook page. Feel free to request to join. We'll approve you right away. Or you can catch the link to the documentary, which is Hammers of War, I believe, right?
Yep.
Yep. On the Bell of Lost Souls This Week in 40K podcasting, there should be a link going up there for this week. After we get this next round coming through. So you can look for it there. Thanks very much, Christopher. Hope you enjoy the show. Definitely get yourself a drink if you really want to enjoy it.
It's
Otherwise, you
true.
know.
The drunker you are, the more entertaining we get.
That's the truth. Okay, so we got Reinhard DeVeilers is sending in an email. He says, "Hey guys, I'm still enjoying the podcast." I like how he puts still. He's like, "I'm still enjoying it."
I mean,
You
you
know.
lost me there. I was thinking maybe I wouldn't by now, but surprisingly enough, I'm still enjoying it.
There were days when he says, "I was wondering if you'd be willing to do a quote unquote review of the game like you did for Firestorm Armada and Strange Aeons. Would you guys be willing to play a game of Warhammer 40K Combat Patrol, basically 40K in 40 minutes? We've been having a lot of fun with it, a lot of fun playing it, especially with themed up patrols. I'd love for you guys to let us know if you enjoy playing it as well as letting listeners not familiar with it hear your opinions. Looking forward to hearing from you guys, Reinhardt."
I think that's a good idea, actually.
I think we can have some fun with it.
It's true, because I mean, honestly, I have heard like from everyone that's ever played combat patrols for 40K, the ones from the Battle Mission book. I've never heard anyone not enjoy it. So,
Well, there's a certain aspect of just being able to play something fun and not so psychotically competitive in Warhammer 40,000.
hey, I played a 40K game this weekend and had a blast.
Oh my
I'll say
gosh.
it. I didn't bring my Tyranids.
Good
I
times.
think that's part of it. With all of that emotional baggage staying at home, I could actually enjoy the game of 40K.
Well, I think that we could definitely do that. I think we'll just have to put it on the schedule for next time where we get a chance to have a game, because I wouldn't mind playing some Combat Patrol with my Necrons or my Orcs.
Nice.
Yeah, I actually had a fun time playing with my Necrons and mopping up Maddie's retardedly bad guard army. It was good times.
Maddie can't build armies, and he certainly can't beat you in
No,
games
he's
you
never
play.
beaten me. He has never beaten me, which is so awesome. So Brian Sin writes in, this is the last one we're going to read before I cue us into the main bonus episode for this show. Brian Sin writes in, he says, many new gamers think that if you want to get answers to something, you should ask a red shirt, which by that he means a Games Workshop employee. I was just wondering, while you were working with Games Workshop, what was the stupidest question that people asked you? I think we kind of talked about this at one point. Mine stands out very, very easily in my head, which is a man came into the store, walked around. He was in the store for a good 15 minutes, and I asked him on two separate occasions, like, "Hey, do you need a hand with anything? You know, are you looking for anything? Do you know what this stuff is?" He says, "Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I don't really need anything. I'm good. Don't worry about it." So another 5 minutes go by. We're kind of sitting there painting, chatting it up with the people in the store, you know. And so he picks up a box of Space Marines and he's looking it over and he's just giving it like he's never seen this before, and he's just utterly examining the shit out of this box. Like he's looking for nutrition facts or something. Like it's just he can't figure out what he's doing. So I go over and I ask him again, you know, like what are you looking for? And I know that people have had this problem before working for Games Workshop, so I'm definitely not the only person who's had this situation come up. And he says, what do I need to run this on my computer? And I was just like, okay. And then, of course, you have to explain to him that it's a game. The second stupidest question I ever got was when a disgruntled girlfriend came into the store and asked me what the melting point of these models were. I said, you could put them in a cupcake tray in the oven and they'd probably melt. She's like, okay. Yeah, so it was a cool. That was a bad one. What about you, Nathan?
it's I don't think I ever had anything that stupid. I honestly think that that the stupidest question would have been when someone came in and was just like, "Oh, look, I'm having an argument with my friend." And he points to the Tyranid Codex and he's like, "How do you pronounce that? Is it Tyranids or Tyranninids?" And I was like, the way it's spelled, Tyranids? Like
Yeah.
it's just like, like it's just what was it where he's just like,
It's
"Wait, are you
phonetic.
serious? Yeah. Do you have a stutter? Is that your problem? Like, what the hell?" I think the only other stupid thing, it wasn't even a question, but there was one guy that pronounced tau as teu,
Teyu, the Teyu.
the
Yes.
teu, and there was no amount of correcting him that would ever fix it, 'cause, and like he'd stop by every single day after school to come in and check out the teu,
Yeah.
and every single day you'd correct him, and it just the next day it was teu again, and you're just like, you know what,
Or the people who
whatever.
would just suddenly drop an R into Necrons. There's like four people called them the Nurcons. You know, the Nurcons. You mean the Necrons? Yeah, the Nurcons. Oh.
The other fun one, if we're going to talk about pronunciation, is I think everyone has a different pronunciation for Catachan.
Oh, the
The Catachans, the like you name it, it's just like everybody says that word differently.
Oh.
It's things. I mean, like I said, the being a red shirt is less about getting stupid questions, because the thing is with the internet, and I mean we both worked when the internet existed for Pete's. Most people get their advice online, so really all you're doing as a red shirt 98% of the time is just introducing the game to new people and helping the really new people get up to the level, get up to just a decent level where they'd be, okay enough at Vets Night. And
Well,
that was the most of the job.
yeah, most of the job as well, especially for Vets Knights, on top of that, when it came to questions, was people would go online and they would read these strategies and they would build these lists and they would get 2 turns into their game and flop. And so we would get a lot of raised hands of just like, well, what do you think I should do now? I read this thing and I built my list and I don't really know how I'm supposed to execute this because he didn't do what I wanted him to do. You know, the bastard, you know, moved into cover instead of charging me. Like, what the hell? What do I do now? So, you know, it's that was more common than actually the stupid questions. But I mean, we always had some weird ones come in. A lot of times it was the young kids, and you just can't help but giggle like an evil bastard in the back room after they leave. Stupid, stupid people. But enough about enough about pronunciation. So anyways, moving on, I'm going to cut over real quickly here to a bonus episode that I had recorded with Kyle, where we talk about Lord of the Rings and War of the Ring and a little bit about that game as well from the perspective of somebody, Kyle, who is very, very interested in the game and enjoys it quite a bit. Nathan was not present for this because I believe his exact words were, "Fuck no." And,
Yes, you did set up the invitation. You're like, "Hey, do you want to come do a bonus episode on Lord of the Rings with Kyle and we'll drink?" And yeah, my response was, "Fuck no."
yes. But please enjoy this episode. We definitely had fun recording it, and I think it was a testament and a lesson learned about bringing a full bottle of scotch to a podcast because I was absolutely schlitzed by the end of this thing. It's pretty bad, so I'll apologize for that in advance. But thanks for tuning in. Sorry for the choppiness of the call, but we'll be back in full force next week for you with a whole new episode. So thanks very much, Nathan.
All right, no worries. Cheers.
I am joined by Kyle, who has been a fairly regular guest host on the show, who does his blog, which is Imaginary Wars blog. And if you do read Kyle's blog, then you know for damn sure that he does like his War of the Ring. And if you listen to our podcast, oh God, we could give a fuck. We really don't like Lord of the Rings, and I love Lord of the Rings. I love the movies. I've read the books. I want to read the book to my kids. I hate the models, and I hated the game when I played it. And you're always trying to sell me on War of the Ring by saying, "Oh no, it's so different. You play Warhammer, you'll like it because you play Warhammer. You'll
But
like it. Just fucking play it."
A vote for Warhammer is a vote for War of the Ring.
Fuck yourself. You're just degrading Warhammer by saying such things. No. And really, what it comes down to is, as I said before we started the podcast, I do trust your judgment, and I know that it probably isn't that bad of a game, but I have no urge to play it. And Nathan, he fucking hates it. You had said just before we started about where you saw my downfall
Oh yeah.
of Lord of the
Oh
Rings.
yeah, I tracked it. You know, what was the term I used? I saw when the ship set sail.
Yes, exactly.
It was it was a staff term.
It was
Well,
the
I
white
mean,
ships to the to Undying Lands.
we weren't working at the same store at that point. So for those who don't know, I don't know if we ever said it, but I worked at Workshop for 5 years. Lang worked at Workshop for how many
Three
years?
years.
Three
3 years. And 2 of those years, you and I were in the same store.
2.5. It was only 3 months that we didn't work
Oh
together.
fuck, was it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, right.
Went,
Before everything went to hell.
I went to West Country Stand.
That's correct.
Location.
That's
Anyways,
correct.
but yeah. So, and you did that tournament. It was like
It was
six
a
months out,
staff
it was
tournament, yeah.
staff tournament after 6 months after I left, and you decided, because back then in the old glory days, they did these staff
Return of the King
tournaments.
days, as we call them.
Ah, but staff tournaments were, they do these big tournaments, and
Oh, I see what
then
you're saying. Yes.
you do it for your store, and then the champion from each store would play each other. So there's two in that in your town.
Yes.
And then they wouldn't fight in the province stand to see who
the
best guy
region.
was,
Yeah.
and then they'd all go off to the head office and they'd all play there. And it was a glorious day
Of gaming and drinking and a free ride.
It was drinking starting at 7:30 in the morning and
Yes.
free drinks for the rest of the day.
And that was the whole thing. So I put together, the way that we were playing it at the time was, I think it was like 250 points, and it was
sorry, the format was
the format was
the two staff tournaments a year, one fantasy,
Yes.
one 40K, and every opposite year that would be the determinant who would
Yes.
go. So Lord of the Ring comes into the fray as the third official core game. So everyone's kind of like, "Ah, well, that kind of breaks up how this whole in odd years Warhammer sends you to the head office, in even years it's 40K."
I like to call that back when GW cared.
Yeah, and so they're like, "I know." So they're like, "Right, we're gonna do three tournaments, and we'll just do it every 3 years. We'll be the, you know, in 2001 it'll be Warhammer, and then 2004 will be the next time Warhammer will be the determining one." So finally, Lord of the Rings turn comes up, and you're like, "Right, well, I want to go to head office. I've heard stories of what
Perfect.
happened."
Yes. Well, because what the first staff tournament that I had played the year before was Warhammer. And that was the first time you and I had played.
I wrecked you, didn't
Oh,
I?
you fucking killed me. I think it was my third game of
That
Warhammer
was
with my orcs.
the second stat, like country stand staff tournament. I made it all the way to head
Yes, you
office.
made it
Two
all the
in
way
a
to head
row.
office, and that was Crow's Feast till the end of
Oh,
days.
yes.
Crow's Feast!
Best spell ever.
Inside joke. But yes, and so this tournament, it was Lord of the Rings, and the format for Lord of the Rings for the staff tournament was you had to have a good force and an evil force, and you had to play each person two games in a row in a night. So you had to play good versus bad, and then you had to play your bad versus their good. And my good guys were all elves, and I basically played
the... Did you do the backward shuffle?
I did the backward shuffle with wood elves because they were cheaper.
Yeah, so the way it works
and
in
I
game...
doubled up with the double hand weapon sword so that every time I got into combat, I would always bank on the double hand weapon guy to get the killing blow, but I banked on my elf to get the plus one bonus.
Yeah.
And it was fucking dirty. But it was so clear. It was just so obvious. And they were the models that I liked, so it all kind of came together. And then for my bad guy force, this was back in the day when you could win the game every single time by just taking named orc characters and goblin characters.
Well, points values were always skewed. It was like, hey, take orc captain 50 points, and he's got, you know, he's...
Or take Grishnak for 55!
Here's his stat line. Or take this named guy, Grishnak, for 55 points, and he's actually twice as good as the other guy.
Because he gets an extra might point, and he has extra abilities.
Well, you know, the union pays for the speaking rules, and that speaking role means your rules are better.
It's a character. But yeah, and you remember my orc army was, or my evil army was fucking retarded. What did I have? 3 wargs, a warg character, 4 Uruk-hai, Uruk-hai crossbow, 2 Uruk-hai characters, 5 orcs, 3 orc characters that were named. Like, it was retarded. I took every named character that I could possibly take, and I just crammed it in there because it was just like, I had more might points than fucking Aragorn, and I was demolishing people. And then by the time we got to the end of the tournament, it was just like, well, that's not a real tournament.
Well, yeah, they're just like, oh, you know, this is going to be, I know this is the month we determine who goes to the Easter tournament in head office, but, will the next tournament 3 months from now be the one that does it? And you're just like,
because I was undefeated,
and I'm fucking done. Fuck you all. You said before this started that
this
was the one that would send me to head office.
Yep.
And now that I've won, I count. Fuck y'all.
And then I cry because I almost got there. I almost got there with my Death Guard when we did the 40K tournament the next year, but Ward beat me with his Primer Black Marines with non-WYSIWYG assault cannons.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the Praetorians.
I never saw them in action. I remember him building them.
He destroyed
his, me. His brain started,
oh,
hey,
I was fucking retarded.
You should just take all assault cannons.
Assault cannons.
He was the guy that invented spam in my world.
Oh, my God.
Well, this is before Bela Lost Soul. So,
it was
I
before
mean,
Bela Lost
Soul. Context-wise, like, this is... Everyone's like, oh, spam, whatever. You're a moron.
To think that Ward sold his soul to the Bela Lost Souls guy, and they built their franchise off of that, because... The dude, I love you, Ward, but you pick one thing! You pick one thing and you spam it, and you're what's bad with games. I love you. I'll see you at Onslaught. cheers to that. Oh, we're both drinking scotch, by the way.
We are drinking Glenmorangie, as I've been told it's pronounced.
Well,
I always preferred Glenmorangie, because that just...
It's not bad. Top me up here, because I'm starting to get low. We were drinking way too much to begin with. Okay, so now...
It's the original Glenmorangie, by the way.
Yeah, not the nectar bullshit.
Not the nectar bullshit. And, my opinion of the scotch has gone up over the night. I started the night going, you know, it's not great scotch. And now I'm like, no,
it's so,
you know,
drinkable.
What? It's a nice socializing scotch.
Yes. And see, this is what I like about having somebody else on the show who actually drinks scotch. Because anytime I try to talk about scotch, Nathan just shivers and goes, ew, it's yucky.
He smokes cigars, doesn't he?
I smoke cigars.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, you drink scotch, so I can't really fault with you doing that. I'm just trying to point out where...
I'm not going to understand that equation until I see it drawn out in graph form. But, okay, so let's talk about what you've been doing lately with your blog and what you've been painting.
Well, I don't know. If you follow my blog, I've...
Imaginary Wars.
ImaginaryWars.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
Though I have just bought the new domain of ImaginaryWars.com.
There you go.
I need to figure out how to link it to my blog.
I'll show you.
And fix in with all my other future plans. But anyways, it is very much predominantly my hobby blog. I've got a bunch of different things going off all at the same time, and I'm trying to keep myself actually painting, because as all gamers know, you probably know that...
You're a homo.
all gamers are procrastinators. I just had this conversation on Facebook where the guy's like, well, who do you think is worse? Who signs up later? 40K players or fantasy? I was like,
yes, I saw that earlier.
I was
today.
Like, no, they're all procrastinators. That's the common gene in gamers.
Exactly.
So I'm setting up a...
That's why MMOs are so popular.
Yeah.
Zero effort.
I set up a blog to keep myself on track because I'm trying to be a lot more involved in a lot of games. So traditionally, I've been playing Eldar since 1989, 1988.
Yes.
So for fucking ever, and my army is mostly old models.
Yes.
And...
But that's what gives it character now, and like that's kind of why you know.
It all looks good. There are good paint jobs, and I like everything like that. I do want to make it a lot more current. I'm going to wait till 6th edition, though, because I think 4th and 5th ed have... I'm not big into the rules. I thought 4th was okay, and I think 5th has just gone too much in one direction. That's an entire...
Right, that is a whole different conversation.
But so I've got Eldar I kind of want to do.
Many times.
I've got a bunch of Marines that I have painted up that I want to turn into cohesive armies. So that's another project. I'm working on Strange Aeons these days, so yes. I want to get more stuff painted up for that. I bought into Star... What's the spaceship game?
Firestorm Armada.
Thank you. I was thinking Starfire Armada. Oh, I was like, that's the wrong name. Anyways,
that's a good game. I would like to get a game with you.
I've got the stuff in Blister Pack.
I fucking hate Aquins, but I'll still have a game against you.
Have you seen the new one? The new
yes!
Super...
Fuck!
Yeah, I was just like, I really picked the right fleet when I...
Well, you even have
You know why I bought them, right?
You have fucking battle carriers. Like, they're retardedly good. And I'm sitting here with my directorate guys, and they're like the smallest battleships on the field. I love them to death, but Jesus Christ, give me something big here, man.
You know why I chose Aquins, right? Because when I worked when I ran that store and was doing my orders, I went to my supplier's website, and I just checked to see which fleet they had in stock.
Power Gamer.
Whatever.
Power Gamer.
Oh, that was back when it was so popular they couldn't keep up with it. So I was just like, I want to play.
Yeah, that's true.
I was like, all right, so...
Terry also picked up the Aquins, and I've played them a couple times, and oh man, they are a pain in the ass. They're a bit fragile when it comes to criticals,
so I'm playing
and that's
Eldar
the biggest thing.
All over again, and I didn't even mean to.
Oh my God.
I hate
circle
my life.
Of life.
But anyways, so I've got a bit of that. I'm also getting started in Flames of War. I've got my Empire Army I want to do a little bit more of. So I've got all these little projects, and I decided a blog would be the way to go. And the first thing I did with that was I stopped blogging entirely, and then I realized...
It was a long time. You had very, very large periods of time. And I think one of the interesting things about your blog was you would get very long when it would come to things that would kind of energize you up. It was usually bitching, or it was usually kind of social observations with regards to...
Between long, like, wall of text, or long, like, span of time between posts?
Yes. Span of time between posts. Is what more that I
choose C, all of the above.
You taught me up. But no. It was more of an issue of, with your blog, you would kind of get into these
modes. I am verbose.
Yes. It wasn't that you were off or that you were one-sided or biased or anything like that. It was just that you were kind of waiting for inspiration to hit.
Yeah.
You were waiting for something to really get you fired up that you were ready to type. And, you know, it's terrible, the situation that you're in, but it has been very good for your blog in the sense
So the story
you,
I was...
You really dedicated yourself to
the game
posting.
Store I was running went tits up, so suddenly
yes.
I...
Yes, it was the last time you were on the podcast as well. We talked about that.
Oh, I couldn't remember. Yeah, but anyway, so yeah,
that
was gone.
The I'm fired barbecue.
Yes, that's right. I believe I call it my unemployment insurance barbecue.
Yes, but, that's what it was. It was the EI barbecue.
But anyway, so yeah, so I've used my blog over the summer to kind of, I made one of my goals, well, seeing as how I'm Mr. Mom for summer, because my wife got full-time hours from her shift work, so now she's the bacon earner.
There you go.
So I decided, you know, this is the time that I should be making sure I get a post a week.
Gonna tap you in the vagina halfway through this show.
Let me open up my legs a little bit more. And
ooh.
That's right.
Somebody get a pillow. No. And you know what? I've been reading your blog, and I do quite enjoy it. And I hope that nobody's listening to this thinking that, is it just Lang promoting his friend's blog? No. We're kind of leading up to this idea
The proof
of
behind that
hobby.
It's not is that what I've been spending most of my summer on blogging about is War of the Ring, which all 40K players hate.
Oh, God. No. Despise or...
If they could round them up and put them in a concentration camp and...
You remember when the Emperor said to Luke, I'm afraid the shields will be quite operational when your friends arrive. And he's just being a dick about it. That's how 40K players feel about War of the Ring and Lord of the Rings.
So whenever I want to troll them, I always talk about how Warhammer players are angry. Get all Warhammer players owe Tolkien a tip of the hat. And that's why they all hate War of the Rings or Lord of the Rings gaming so much, is because they know deep down they owe Tolkien everything.
Well,
it's a trolling statement.
But it's a whole other conversation.
I just like watching
the
veins
time.
Pop and guys just like,
oh, the veins pop. That's for
But anyways, yeah, so I've been doing lots of War of the Ring, and that is the proof in the pudding of this is not just blatant plugging, you know, your buddy's stuff. So we're on today.
I don't even like you.
Yeah, I peed in your pillow.
Oh, God damn. I apologize. You know what? It's good that this is a bonus episode because it's so fucking erratic. It really is pathetic.
Right now, I'm pretending you said erotic. That makes no sense.
That is what I said. You heard me correctly, sir. I'm just going to take my pants off and we'll continue.
All right.
Okay. So no. One of the biggest problems that I have with Lord of the Rings as a gaming system is the models. I don't like the scale. Yeah. And specifically with the rank and file, because I find that the characters actually are quite good. I find that the characters do grab my attention really well, like Gandalf and Aragorn and Haldir and all that kind of stuff. Like, I love painting those up. And usually I find that I really enjoy them. The Barrow-wites was one of the most fun I ever had painting a model. And I saw that you had, what, like 12 Barrow-wites on the side of your table there?
They're a kick-ass unit in War of the Ring.
I can imagine. They were a kick-ass unit in Lord of the Rings. But I hate painting the rank and file plastics because I feel like they are.
Lord of the Rings has done itself a huge disservice. And I mean, when we were at workshop, we managed to be around one of the higher up guys' lots. So we got to hear some of the backstory. And I think the problem with Lord of the Rings, strategy battle game before War of the Ring, was always that there's New Line's lawyers are always telling workshop how to make games, how to make models, how to sell games. Workshop's like, well, no, but the biggest conversation was,
well, they were always worried that we were going to try to screw them.
There's like Fellowship of the Ring, right? That's got to be, you know, you're going to try and screw us. So that's got to be a big battle game. And Workshop's like, well, what we're doing it from the movie. So how about we do all the orcs and all the elves and all the guys from Numenor as that first opening scene? That'd be a huge battle. And Workshop's like, or not Workshop, sorry, New Line's like, that's 30 seconds of the movie. That's right. Stupid. So right. Like, okay.
We're talking about New Line Cinema, by the way. Yeah. And honestly, to give you guys a little bit of context here, just in case you're a bit confused.
This is circa 2000,
This is circa 2001, 2002. And really, what it was, when The Lord of the Rings came out, it was a huge hit. And Games Workshop, you know, kind of got in on the ground floor, and they grabbed it. And it was a huge moneymaker for Games Workshop. But New Line Cinema, which is, they're still around.
Alliance New Line.
It's Alliance New Line whatever. Now, but they were constantly afraid that this was just going to be another merchandising con.
Yeah.
That they would sign into, like, shitty toys or something like that. And that Games Workshop, because of the fact that they were a slightly bigger company, would essentially just be trying to take advantage of the Lord of the Rings name.
The fear of New Line was people come and say, oh, I just saw Lord of the Rings and you have this Lord of the Rings game. And every Workshop guy would be trained to say, Lord of the Rings, have you seen Warhammer? And
yes, that's what it was.
Remember, we had to sign.
We had to sign a waiver.
We had to sign legal documents saying that we would never do that ever.
If somebody up to you and talked about Lord of the Rings, you could not talk about
commingle.
Oh my God, commingling.
Yeah, that was a buzzword in all Workshop stores.
Commingling you cannot commingle. Hell, you would get fired for commingling.
Yeah, if it ever got to New Line that some Workshop red shirt ever said, Lord of the Rings is cool, but so is Warhammer. I play Ogre Kingdoms.
Yes.
Even though they didn't exist then. The Ogre Kingdoms are a product of the Lord of the Rings bubble. But but anyways, then, you know, Workshop's like, well, if we do it too badly in a big bad way, we get to hire lawyers to sue us ourselves out of business. So therefore, this commingling issue is actually a real issue. You know, you'll get fired.
Oh, head office was terrified.
Yeah.
They were terrified that we would be fucking it up. I mean, even when it came to our product count, when it came to our training, when it came to our actual performance in terms of core sales, they were always terrified that New Line was going to look at this and say, oh, you're just using the Lord of the Rings name to sell your other product. But of course, it was a huge moneymaker for Games Workshop, so they were all for it.
Alliance New Line didn't know that everyone who touched Warhammer fucking hated Lord of the Rings. It was actually kind of humorous that way.
Well, there was a huge age difference, too.
Yeah. But anyway,
so yeah, we got audience for Lord of the Rings.
But go back to the Fellowship of the Ring box. So then next thing Workshop does to New Line, who's telling them, you know, don't screw us over. They're like, well, what's a big scene in the movie? They're like, oh, Moria, that's a big scene in the movie. So like, okay, so we'll put like the Fellowship in the box and a cave troll or, you know, a bunch of goblins or this or that. And New Line's like, the Fellowship in the box, well, that would be stupid for one side just play 9 guys and the other guys get a horde. You can't do that. I'll tell you what, let's put the goblins in there and let's take all the elves and all the men from Numenor that you see at the beginning of the movie and put them all in the box. That'd be a great war game.
And this was Hollywood producers just not really understanding the market.
I mean,
and that's what it came down to.
Now, that is the downside of and this is why I absolutely agree with you. The plastic models when they first came out were being ruled by guys who didn't have a fucking clue, but had lawyers who knew a clue about law, so they could make sure that we basically got to play games designed by lawyers.
All right, so let's jump forward.
Anyways, so I'm going to work to the strength. Right. The strength of Lord of the Rings, the thing I've always liked, has been in 4 years, 5 years, they came up with 4 editions. That's as many additions as 40K at that point had done in almost 20 years.
Yes.
So like the rules or not, you got rules where every year they said, okay, what's not working? What is working? Let's move forward. So you got really, really fast development.
Right.
And that's, well, and that's
it,
why
it was pushed. It was all on a timeline.
Yeah. And that's, you know, why,
there
that's
were
why
deadlines involved in all of this, because we had to be able to release the games within the range of the movie releases.
Yeah.
So there really was no haggling or negotiation involved in this. And when I was working for Games Workshop at the time that Lord of the Rings was moving into the Two Towers and moving into the Return of the King, we were at the local cinema. Yeah. Big cinema
every
here
Christmas
in Canada.
We got...
Every Christmas and every release for the first week. And it was always like a struggle, like who's going to go stand outside of a theater in front of a bunch of painted models in your red shirts talking about how awesome this little game is. Oh my god. And that was right around the time that fucking, oh god, what was it? Fucking Jenny from the Block.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. We heard that song about a billion times.
Anyone who listens to it that's worked in the theater is going to know this. They play five clips, and those five clips are 40 seconds long, and they make them go so basically they last as long as it takes in an average lineup. So
right,
if you actually
you're
going
to get your
there,
popcorn, you're going to walk to the line,
well,
you might
catch
70% of what's happening.
You walk, you're at the end of the line, you hear Jenny on the Block. Halfway through the line, you see the trailer for, what's that movie where, remember the people
that
like,
was Cold Mountain.
Cold Mountain.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
When you're ordering a drink, you see the trailer for this, and when you're, you know, getting your straw and whatever, you see the trailer for this. Well,
right.
For us idiots who were in the red shirts in front of painted models, we got to see this thing. Like,
it was
there for 4 hours.
And anyone, 6 hours of that shit.
And anyone who works in the theater gets the same treatment.
Right. Well, but the problem was, is
you know,
between
I still
Lord
know,
of the Rings movies.
I still know the trailer for Paycheck off by heart.
Yes!
Where's my paycheck?
Oh, fuck.
Anyways, we're going off the rails here.
Okay, but no. But what it really came down to was, over the years, the game has progressed through forced fear, or through deadlines, or through whatever it is.
It's been forced to be made better, which is what I respect. That's the one reason why I really do like it, is because they managed to do in 4 years, 5 years. Actually, yeah, they had 2 years of Return of the King.
But if there's anything that Games Workshop doesn't want to do, is it's lose a license.
Yeah.
They're all about making sure that they release Blood Bowl every 10 years. And fucking Hero Quest.
I'm waiting for what is it? 7 years? Is it if it's American law, it's 7 years before it goes public domain. So I'm waiting.
I thought
for...
it was 10 here in Canada.
Depends though. It's probably 10 because they're a UK based company. So I'm waiting
for. Oh, this is a great podcast.
In 2021, I will pick up the next version of Dreadfleet.
Yes, Dreadfleet. Fuck. Fuck all of you. Anyways, yeah, we'll buy it. Fucking assholes. Anyways. It'll make a good episode just because we're going to bitch about that. even if it's a good game, we're just going to hate it.
So that is why I've always said Lord of the Rings is good, because ultimately that was the strength behind the game. They had lots of weaknesses, and I've never been like, no, it's the best. It's not. I know those guys in Workshop now, they're like, Finecast are the best models on the market.
Mm.
And I was like, no, they're not. And I've never been like that with Lord of the Rings. I'm like, no, it's not the best thing ever, but it's so strong in so many ways. And when War of the Ring came out, I got doubly excited, because the problem with Lord of the Rings has always been, it's a skirmish game where they didn't want to bog you down with detail. But the moment you tried to amp it up and play like a bigger game, it turned into, well, we're just bumper cars and whoever rolls more sixes is going to win the game.
Right.
And that is the flaw of the game. And I get that. And that's why I like to play the game.
That and the massive loopholes.
But if I... the loopholes aren't as bad as War of the Ring. And I'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
So I've always liked it. But I'll play it every once in a while. And I'm just like, you know what? I didn't roll 25 sixes that game, so I lost. So, and I'm, you know, and that is a weakness. But there's enough good stuff in there that it is a fun time to play.
Right.
So when War of the Ring came out, I was like, at last I can play big games and it's all going to be awesome.
Okay, well, let me break in here. And I don't mean to derail us, but...
Oh, don't you?
Okay, so one of the things that I always felt was missing from Lord of the Rings and seems to be missing from War of the Rings is the narrative aspect. This is one of the things that is drawing me so much towards Strange Aeons, the way that I'm playing it right now. Now, I got my ass kicked in the first game.
And you don't care.
And somebody has said to me that, you should just start over again until you win a game and you start moving forward a little bit. And I said, no, this is part of the game. This is what makes... Like, this is where the flavor comes from.
Yeah.
War of the Ring seems like there's no flavor.
Yeah, you know what? And I as you play more, I go back and forth next. I think you're right. But the game... Well,
all
right.
Well, that's been Jaded Gamercast for this week, man.
As I said before, though. But as a Warhammer player...
I don't
player,
hear that often enough. Thank you.
as a Warhammer player who is basically playing War of the Ring with Warhammer models, you know the game is a fun time to go through.
It is. It is a fun time.
And that is... War of the Ring has got tons of bad things about it, and that is a big problem, and if there was more lawyers breathing down Workshop's neck, the game would get better. That's the biggest weakness against it. They pushed it really fast to keep it a license alive. They phoned it in like they do everything these days. And if they had to come up with a second edition right away, it would be a lot better.
Do you think that it's the competitive nature of wargaming that there's this dichotomy between this really competitive nature of wargaming in the age that we live in now, and the fact that War of the Ring really isn't meant for that competitive level?
Well, it's Matt Ward rules, right? I think the guy can write decent rules, but he needs a handler like George W. Bush needs a handler. Like,
I honestly think that your post on that was spot on.
Yeah.
It really was spot on. And if you haven't read it, go fuck yourself if you think I'm pumping his blog. But
imaginarywars.wordpress.com.
No. I mean, I think that you were spot on in the fact that, and we talked about it on the show, and I even referenced it at one point on the show, where I said, thank you for topping me up, I need it, is that, you know, I feel like Matt Ward needs a handler.
And he totally does.
To an extent that's
the guy. The guy is a create. He's super creative. I'll not extol too many virtues, but the guy has got, I'm sure...
I just think he's just enthusiastic.
I think you're absolutely right, but that enthusiasm
is... that nerdy enthusiasticness.
And so when he comes up with the rules, he's like, oh, we can do this, and
blood knives, blood axes, blood fists, blood amulets.
But his rules-wise, he's like, the rule could do this, the rule could do that.
Yes.
I mean, this is where the random charges from Warhammer came. It came from War of the Ring, right?
Oh, I see where you're going. Yeah.
You know, so the guy has some good ideas, and they really do flesh out. I mean, yeah, all UTC guys and Podhammer guys and all that who say random charges has fucking destroyed your world. Whatever.
Deal with that shit.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you're playing, like, Realm of Battle Boards hasn't already kind of wrecked some of that already. I mean, I remember when that was the big challenge.
That's the whole conversation of the fact that they got rid of pre-measuring is the greatest thing that ever happened to game, to Warhammer.
That's my thought about Matt Ward. The guy's got lots of good gaming ideas. The guy should not be allowed to talk about the backstory side of stuff. I hate the word fluff.
You shouldn't be able to write fluff?
Yeah. Well, fluff is what he writes, right? Like, it's terrible.
Fuck!
But so War of the Ring is actually a very, very solid game in a lot of ways. If they had just bothered, you know, Games Workshop and their aversion to all proofreaders,
Imperial Gurad.
Oh God,
we were working for Games Workshop when that shit came through.
This is where we have to say what country we're in. Actually, no, we don't, because that's all gone. But in Country Stand, they decided to have a White Dwarf that had Neighbor Stand do an issue, and then Country Stand would have a 8-page little extra, like, polybag.
What was it called specifically?
I can't remember.
Was it the Amendment? It was the. All right, fuck it. I'm going to break the code. I apologize. It was the Canadian...
Supplement!
Done.
But the very first one, in big block letters, like, go onto Microsoft Word and put it into, like, size 20 font. It may have been size 15 or 16 in Times New Roman. It was like... The new Imperial Gurab.
That's how you know how nerdy this fucking podcast is that we really know the names of the various fonts and how they affect size.
I know enough guys type enough stuff that if you tell them the font size, they'll be like, oh, I know what size that is.
I work in IT. I know how that works.
And the second issue was when they wrote up that Treatsy on I think it was Lizardman or whatever. And I talked to the guy. I was like, Treatsy, what's that? He's like, oh, Treatsy is when you do... I'm like, no, you're talking about a treatise. A treatise is a misspelled word. And he's like, no, it's not. A treatise is when you is a long document about, you know, warriors and blah blah. I was like, no, that's a treatise. I'm not trying to go all academic on you, but it is. Anyways,
that's fucking fantastic. All right, War of the Ring. All right, we're really getting sidetracked here. Okay, so
it needs to be said we've drank two thirds of a bottle of scotch.
We're really far through it. Okay, so
I don't even feel it.
You're so full of shit. I know you're a lightweight compared to me right now.
Oh, I am. Anyways, we wouldn't want to turn this hobby blog podcast. I was going to say blog. Hobby podcast into just guys talk about how much they drink all day with no...
You should post that on iTunes. No. Okay, so let's break this down back to the original topic, which is Kyle would like me to play War of the Ring.
But you play Warhammer already. I mean, it's like you're playing the game... You like that?
But as I always like to say, and I've said to you on many occasions, Warhammer is to Lego as War of the Ring is to Duplo. And that's all it really comes down to, is the fact that, you know what, like, if I like Warhammer, I'm going to play Warhammer. I'm not going to play the slimmed down edition of Warhammer.
Fair enough. Okay.
For the reasons that I play Warhammer,
I will put out some real effort this time. The beauty of War of the Ring is that it kind of scales back a little bit. It doesn't need as much extra detail. It's not detail driven.
Because the models are shit. I agree.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Where I was going to go with that is actually the newer models over the last couple of years have actually gotten substantially better.
I would not know.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you'll just have to take my word for it.
I will take your word for it.
Awesome. But,
the Moomak.
It's all elephant all the time. But, I think when the game first came out, a lot of guys out on the interwebs, and I mean, take that with a grain of salt, were very much giving a lot of comparisons to Epic, and that it was a game of, you had bigger blocks of stuff, and then you had these elements that would then affect, that would sort of modify those in. And that's, I think, where Warhammer has fallen short on that. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that.
I agree with you because the real beauty of Epic was the fact that it was kind of wading through the bullshit and really giving you the idea. Like, we always bitch and complain where we say, like, oh, game of Warhammer 40,000 will come down to like a roll of a 4+, depending on the armies that you're playing. It's rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
We've always complained about that to a certain extent with Epic, or even Warmaster, to an extent. I mean, it would be nice to see them do something with Warmaster.
I mean, that was my excitement with War of the Rings, that it belongs more lumped in with Epic or Warmaster, both games I've played as well.
Okay.
And I think it was the big thing. Is like, when that came out, I was like, you know, I'm a super nerd for Lord of the Rings. No one plays Warmaster. No one plays Epic.
No, and you really are a super nerd for Lord of the Rings.
And those two games I really want to play, but no, there's no one that does it. So suddenly this is War of the Ring. I mean, for me, that was just like, here's a game that I might be able to find half a dozen people to play with.
Yeah.
It has its faults, absolutely.
Yes, it does.
If you read my blog, I have three very long posts of this is Agmar. Bullshit.
We're all afraid of the ring wraiths, right? No, not really.
No, not like elves. My God, when elves come to town, everyone shits their pants right then and there.
Yes.
Yeah. Ring wraiths, not so much. It's like, really?
Right. Okay, so to kind of condense this down a little bit.
Yeah, we're ramblers.
Well, and this is why this is a bonus episode, is really people can kind of just hit pause or hit stop at one point and never start again. Guilty.
I'll pause this and not come back.
Well, we talk about the bonus episodes as being kind of niche episodes, but no. For me, when I look at Lord of the Rings, I get frustrated at the fact that it does seem very similar to Warhammer, but it feels like it is the Duplo of Warhammer. And I look at it and I think to myself, well, what is the motivation for me to build an army of good or evil? And put together, like, say, for instance, if I'm building Lothlorien.
Okay.
Right? And that is a bit of a slur, and that's kind of what's great about Tolkien, is that I can be drinking a lot of scotch and still say Lothlorien.
The same way as when you're sober. Hey-o.
It's the same way as I'm sober. So if you're playing the Jaded Gamercast bonus episode drinking game, the number of cheers that we've done so far this episode, you should be drinking every time that happens.
We should have said that first, but...
Yeah, it would have been good. But, like, for me, I look at it and I think to myself, like, well, what is the motivation for me to paint up a Lothlorien army for War of the Ring when I can put together and paint a Warhammer army where I'm going to actually get more enjoyment out of it? Now, that's a half question.
I was going to say, but I'd argue that you should be playing it because you're going to have fun with it. If you're saying, but I'm going to hate it, why should I play it? Well, then you shouldn't play it. I don't know. I don't know how to.
Didn't you used to work in retail? Fucking sell me. I'm an idiot customer who is drunk, who walked into your store halfway through the day, and you need to sell me on buying the War of the Rings starter kit.
Come on, Gil. You need one more core game to get Target.
Come on, Gil.
Okay, the big thing is the way... See, it was a much easier argument back when there was 7th edition. Because the game had just stuff that was really, really wrong with it. With 8th edition, you're doing half the stuff that's in War of the Ring already.
I agree.
So now it's kind of like, well, you know, why should I eat your fancy...
I've got scotch all over my laptop right now from that last cheers. Don't get sidetracked. I'm so sorry. I apologize to all of our listeners right now.
Anyways. I think the neat there's neat things in the game. I really are going for the flavor. That's got to be the biggest thing. So yes. Some of the neat stuff
you
is
have to love. You
the
have
characters, to love the, story. The heroes in the game actually don't interact with anything else in the game other than other heroes, which is, I think, a really kind of a bold step. Kind of falls apart here and there, but it's actually kind of neat. So when you have Elrond leading a bunch of elves, he doesn't wade into combat and kill a whole bunch of other orcs. Now he can do that, but it's not like done Warhammer style. Where it's like, oh, I've got 10 attacks. I'm just going to, blah, there, you're all dead. Fuck you. This one, it's more like, no, Elrond does these things. He kind of helps them out in certain ways, and he has his special spells and stuff like that that helps augment them. But it's not, he just wades into combat. Now, if he goes up against another hero...
And that's different from the original Lord of the Rings strategy
battle. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. No, this game is leaps and bounds different from the actual strategy battle game. This is like the mass game of, like, huge... It's meant to be huge army. So when you're building units... Their units, they use the big tray. They have the movement trays of eight guys.
Okay, now explain
it.
The trays a little bit more. And again, I apologize for sidetracking you, because when I've looked at the trays for War of the Ring, I kind of have to laugh because it is square trays with circular movement bases.
Yeah, well, you know what? That,
circular and, bases. I won't say circular.
Yeah, it's got it's got recessed divots that are circular for 25 mil bases. I think that's actually really cool, because that basically has made it so you buy stuff for Lord of the Rings strategy battle game and it's usable in War of the Ring and vice versa.
Okay, sure.
Back and forth.
I'll give you that.
And so whenever you're building up your armies, you buy companies of these. They're called companies. Each movement trait is called a company, and formations have got multiple companies in them. So essentially, you've got your big regiment is called a formation in the game, and it's lots of guys. It's neat because it's a game that works pretty seamlessly with me throwing down 130 guys, you know, 130-man army, and so on and so forth. The neat thing with heroes is when heroes fight each other, that's when all the carnage happens. Like, that's...
Okay.
So we do what's called a heroic duel, and we both roll a d6, add our fight skill, and then the difference between the two is whoever wins the fight, and that's how many d6s he gets to roll on their little chart. And the little chart would be like, oh, if you roll a 1, nothing happens. If you roll a 2, d3 enemy soldiers get killed. If you roll a 3, you do a wound to the other hero. If you roll a 4 or 5, it's like 2 d3 guys... get hurt, and if you roll a 6, it's like, oh, you do 2... No, it's 4 or 5 is you do 2 wounds to the other guy. A 6 is, oh, you kill 2d3 extra soldiers, and you do 2 wounds on the other guy.
Okay.
So when you're having, like, the game that I saw where Balrog went and dueled Legolas, the Balrog rolled, like, a 6, and Legolas rolled a 1, so Balrog's like, okay, so my fight is 10 plus 6 is 16, and your fight is, like, 3 plus 1 is 4, so I get 12 dice. He rolled them all up and killed every last fucking elf on the board, and did, like... 10 wounds to Legolas. Legolas got 2 wounds. And Duncan's just looking like, what the hell just happened here?
So how do you manage overkill in the War of the Ring? All right, so...
It's got neat stuff like that, and it's the spell system...
It's innovative. I'll give you that.
Yeah, and it's... And like I said, it's taken a lot of the strengths of this game are now inside Warhammer, but still keeping Warhammer very Warhammery. That if you're like, well, I like Warhammer, I already play Warhammer, why should I do War of the Ring? I would argue... You know, when you've done 5 armies, you're looking for an army 6 and nothing excites you, that's when you should do War of the Ring. Because it's not going to matter until then.
Okay, so how do you feel about the War of the Ring gaming community? Between, all right, now, and again, I understand that this is a very narrow view of E-Town and Cowtown in the country of Countrystan. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
No, it comes down to the idea that, honestly, it feels like War of the Ring is on par with things like Gothic and Blood Bowl and...
Yeah, I'll give you that.
You know, it's the idea of like, okay, I'll go and I'll build a War of the Ring army, but I may only have 2 people to play against in my community.
Yeah, no, and that's part of the downside of it, right? It's, I'm not going to sugarcoat that. That's the thing that sucks is by going for that, you're not really signing up for a big, vibrant community, and you're going to play lots of different people all the time, and so on and so forth. But if, I mean, it really is for the guys who think, you know, Lord of the Rings is pretty cool. It's for guys who are kind of are tired of Warhammer. Actually, one of the guys that's playing is Mike.
Yes.
And he really likes it. I think it's because
he hates everything.
He it's true. We were talking about it the other day, and... I think what the problem is he still remembers Workshop in the mid-90s.
Yes.
And War of the Ring has got a little bit of that spark that the mid-90s Workshop stuff had. And I think, well, it's, and I think it's where
flavor.
It comes from.
It's the flavor. It's the theme. It's the fact that you're playing with a narrative. I feel like with Warhammer 40,000 specifically, Warhammer 40,000 has fallen into
competitiveness as a driving force.
Well, and I think Workshop knows that. They're like, oh, no, it's not. We're actually going to make sure our rules aren't actually competitively balanced. But, oh, yeah, it's all about competition.
Right, and that's exactly what it comes down
to. Nudge. And Warhammer's going that way.
They cannot be oblivious to the metagame.
Yeah.
Right? And that's one of the things that we talk about quite often when you're on the show is the metagame with regards to Warhammer 40,000 and Warhammer. Okay, so I'm going to kind of push this ahead here.
Yeah, we are just all over the
place.
It's
not so bad. I mean, it's a bonus episode. I'm just trying to keep us on track here. So you had talked before about the downsides to War of the Ring and kind of the imbalances and the ideas.
Well, it's a Matt Ward book, so I mean, there's this is the problem. I mean, they point he's a fucking goblin fanatic. They point in one direction, he just fucking goes, and
he may come right back at you.
Oh yeah, it's just absolutely random. And there are things he does that are genius, and it's awesome, and he deserves all the accolades associated. But there's stuff he does that's so fucking stupid that the guy should be fired. And if they just had someone going, no, Matt, that's fucking stupid. We're not doing that. Try again.
The guy
would be a lot more consistent. It'd actually be kind of cool. But that's not going to happen.
So would you say that Matt Ward is the George Bush of Games Workshop?
I don't know. Probably. George W. Bush?
W.
Yeah, W.
Not senior.
W for Ward.
You classy fucker. Drink, bitches. Okay, so, all right.
But so the downside is there's lots of little loopholes. I mean, they decided right off the bat that one of the first rules they were not going to put in their book was the rule of ones and sixes. So ones never fail.
Yes, correct.
So that's not a big deal. They then decide to come up with rules where, you know, the old giant skeleton, the skeleton giant rules from the Tomb Kings where, hey, I've got four attacks on the charge. And
Rampaging Colossus or Colossal Charge.
But the idea, I mean, and the old Swooping Hawk XR could have it as well. Every time I hit you, I can then roll dice, keep going. So
where is that from? I don't even remember.
That's, that's second edition Eldar.
That sounds like Imperial Gurad.
But anyways, where I'm going with this is, so they've got this, they introduced this ability of, every time you roll a hit, you roll that dice again until you roll a miss. Again, that's okay, because in this game, the biggest thing it does, actually, we haven't touched on, is it got rid of the armor save thing.
Yes.
And it got rid of the two wound roll. So when I rock up to you and I decide to fucking fight you...
Well, this is why we compare it so similarly to Epic and Warhammer.
I compare,
it really cuts out the bullshit.
Yeah, I take my strength versus your defense, and then that tells me what I need, and whatever I roll at success... Your guys are dead. They just get removed instantly. Right. However, this is the game that also introduced the simultaneous going on initiative. But instead of, you know, initiative of 1 to 10 in the game has got monsters, cavalry, infantry. All infantry are simultaneous. Cavalry go before infantry. Monsters go before cavalry. If you're a flying monster, you go before everything else. Yeah, I just blew your mind.
I'll do it this way.
All infantry are initiative 4.
Okay.
All cavalry are initiative 5. All monster initiative 6.
It doesn't feel quite like Duplo anymore. It feels like one of those 1,000-piece puzzles of the
but anyways,
Eiffel Tower.
So that's...
Because I've been drinking.
Thank you. Anyways, so that's one of the big things is that you're just killing guys left, right, and center, which is kind of cool. It makes your games actually, the first couple turns are pretty slow, and then things just really ramp up really, really quickly.
Well, and I think that that's one of the huge proponents to people kind of turning away from tabletop wargaming as it is right now in this current environment that we live in, is the fact that the final turns tend to be so prolonged and drawn out. And that's one of my complaints with Firestorm Armada. As much as I really love Firestorm Armada, unless you're playing on a campaign scale, the last few turns actually really drag because your ships start to kind of wear down. You don't have the firepower to do the damage that you need. And unless you're getting really, really lucky rolls, you're not going to be demolishing your opponent's army, which again is more realistic. That's perfectly fine. And I'm not against it. I just think that it's such a departure from what we're used to with wargaming that...
I'm trying to work in some sort of joke about like a cripple fight.
Try hobo fight. Ham sandwich involved.
They just get so tired or drunk.
My calcium levels are so low. My bones are so brittle. Malk. Everything's coming up, Milhouse. So I'm gonna bring us to the end here because this has been an exceptionally erratic bonus episode.
I prefer erotic.
If you were to going to, you heard me right.
Anyways, but
if you were going to sell somebody on War of the Ring, which I know that you want to do because you do quite enjoy it, and as you said, after being unemployed and working on building up your own store and working on your blog and working on painting stuff up, the majority of gaming that you've done over this summer has been War of the Ring. If you were going to sell somebody on War of the Ring, and I know you've done it recently with some of your friends, how would you do it? Give me 50 words or less. No, just kidding. But literally, like, just sell us. Sell us on it, because I'm not convinced at this point.
Yeah, well, you're not going to be because you play Warhammer. That's true. It is definitely a different game, and that is the joy of it, is that there's enough smart stuff going on that as you see it unroll.
Well, I agree with the innovation.
And that's the biggest reason, is that innovation is there. The neat thing about the game is, and then a lot of guys, you know, any 40K player will hate it for this, the game is not about list building. I mean, half the game in 40K
Which
now
is... why you love it.
possibly. It's neat, because actually building a list in the game is kind of boring. Then you throw it down on the table, and you just see it all unfold, and you realize it's your tactics that turn your army into something, okay, rather than the rules telling you...
Oh, I gotcha.
And I mean,
well, you had said before, one of the things that you always sold to people when you were working for Games Workshop was, or even when you were running your own store, was play the army, not the list.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And the game really does support a lot of that very, very well. So it is a game where you write a list, you're like, I feel like there's no bells and whistles. And then you play the game, and you see how all the stuff interacts with each other. And that makes it, I mean, that's what got Scott on board. He saw it, he played a couple times.
Scott West.
You betcha.
Gotcha.
And he's very much like, you know what? I will do an army of elves. This game is pretty awesome. And, you know, it's not a main game. And I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to replace everything, but it's kind of a neat game for when you're just fucking sick of the metagame in 40K. If you're doing enough Warhammer, you're doing enough War of the Ring already, then if you make the jump over it, you're going to be like, well, it's different in these three ways, but at most of the stuff I'm doing already,
yeah,
it's a hard sell for me to you. Like, it really is. This is also why I was a good salesman, because I was honest. I wouldn't just try and sell the bad stereo
to
everyone.
You're not the hard sell. Well, no, and I do agree to a certain extent, because really, I think that you really did hit the nail on the head when you talked about the metagame for Warhammer 40,000 and Warhammer Fantasy, because it is such an enormous community that the metagame is predominant in how you're building for tournaments, if you are building for tournaments. And one of the things that we do want to talk about in future podcasts with specific kind of focus on practice gaming is just kind of getting back into the groove of playing the game that you want to play, as opposed to playing the winning game.
Yeah. Right?
And I do see where the draw is for War of the Ring, in the sense that it's slightly more narrative, it's a little bit more about your own personality, and you do get to kind of get yourself a little bit more involved in the game, as opposed to playing it like a competitive MMO sport where you just want the best golf club and you're at the driving range every day.
Yeah, but the stupidity check is...
Oh, wow, there you go.
Games Workshop still makes an Ardboys version for War of the Ring, and the game is...
Are you
just
fucking kidding me?
The game is not designed for it. Like, the game is...
Shit!
The game is not designed for it at all. Like, I mean, guys...
Well, it's not designed for competitive
Sorry, going
gaming.
Back to the example I was trying to give with the minimum ones.
Okay.
So, this is why this is so important. So, you have this ability that you can keep rerolling your hits as long as they're hits. You can take heroes who always give you +1 to your dice roll. So, if you roll a 1... that becomes a 2 right off the bat, natural ones. And if you take a second guy, so if you take Gimli and Aragorn and Dane, you've got this. These guys are +3 on all their dice rolls. So if I go up to you in combat, I don't have to roll dice. I've actually killed all your guys already, because...
Oh, fuck!
If I got 30 attacks and I roll all 30 ones, well, those are all 4s, so that kills 30 of your guys. I'm allowed to now roll those again to kill more guys. And so on. Like, this is how the game... These are the level of breakdowns in the game.
Fuck.
So the game has got some definite problems. This is why I'm like, I need a second edition would be really, really good, because there's lots
so
of good
stuff.
So
do you see that coming with The Hobbit? Because again, New Line's in it, right? Like, they're in it.
I don't know what Workshop's going to do, but the door is open for them, because they've bought their licenses up for so long.
Yes, but New Line's made money.
But they're going to do something with The Hobbit, whether it's going to be War of the Ring is... They, you know, I don't know, fire Matt Ward and do something new. Or if they're like, no, War of the Ring has got enough good that it's salvageable, we want to turn to the Hobbit Battle of Five Armies game. I mean, I could see it going that way.
Because they tried Battle of Five Armies with the War Master scale, and that just flopped.
Well, I mean, how many tweens thought Hobbit was cool back when they first saw Fellowship of the Ring? They didn't know what the Hobbit was.
There was no movie. How can I be excited without a movie?
So like
God
I said...
damn it, Michael Bay gave me explosions.
If not explosions, at least McGee.
Oh, fuck you. McGee is actually pretty good.
Anyways.
You need to watch Supernatural. All right, so, okay, we've wrapped it up here. I'm not going
to
get
But the stupidity check is that workshop, with huge gaping holes like this, workshop's like, we need to make it so guys are playing with huge armies with the meanest list they can. It's all about beating face and seeing who's the best guy. It's like, that's the dumbest thing in the world with a game that lets you do this. I mean, the winning list 1 year was the guy took 24 elves, not 24, three stands, and bought all elven heroes and made it so that he was killing 4d6 enemy soldiers per turn. Radagast made it so that he's got an ability that turns on every turn that makes it so no one's allowed to charge you. And someone else makes it so that way if you want to shoot at them, you need sixes no matter what they're shooting at. It was turn is like they could kill 46 guys per turn.
And
you
was the 1 in 300 chance of actually getting into combat.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, and that's the guy that won. And I think it's like, oh, right on. I'm going to go up against this because I think I have an idea. And they're like, no, it's not beatable. Because of the format of the way Workshop did their stuff, it was just like, make the hardest list and we're going to come up with bullshit, you know, scenarios, and it's just going to be dumb because we're fucking stupid.
So you feel like it really is just, it's a lost opportunity.
It's on the verge of being a lost opportunity, but it's a fun enough game when you're playing with friends. This is where it goes back with Gothic. Gothic was a great game.
As long as you weren't Matt Damon.
As long as you were...
goddamn Taufleet.
As long as you were all on the same page and you knew why you were gaming.
Right.
As soon as you were like, I'm gaming because I want to take what I like about 40K and apply it somewhere else, Gothic fell apart. Mordheim fell apart. I mean, we all saw that with Mordheim. Guys just be like, well, I'll just take...
Oh, God, yes.
I'll take all Skaven, and I'll take all Slings, and I'll shoot...
Necromunda.
40 times per turn. Instead of 40 shots across your army, I'm just going to do 40 shots on that guy. Your army is 9 guys big, and by, you know, I'm going to kill...
By turn three, 300 points less than I am.
So, and that is the problem War of the Ring has, is if you're playing amongst friends, and you all want to have this fun game of epic battles where you're not doing dumb shit, you'll have a ton of fun. If you're trying to measure your dick again, it's, you know, the game is going to fall apart. I didn't mean you personally.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I've got a long enough dick. How long is your dick? Okay, so let's... All right, so that's been Jaded Gamercast. And I mean, I follow with Kyle here. You failed. I don't have any real reason to play this game. I mean, honestly...
I would agree with you. You don't.
In the future, if you and I are getting together to have a game night and you loan me one of your armies, like, I would definitely be looking forward to playing. But you know this more than... as much as anybody who listens to the show. I am competitive. You know, Nathan and I are both competitive. And we like to win, and we like to build lists that win, but we also are kind of in this very weird, thin, gray line. And I understand that that's a little bit self-edifying, but it just kind of comes down to this idea that it's just like, well, no, I like to be competitive, but I also like to not be the leaf blower. So War of the Ring, it just really doesn't appeal to me. And until they really bring the models up to standard that I'm comfortable with,
oh, fair enough,
then I'm not going to find any real love of the game.
In my defense, I would like to say that when you first said, "Hey, we should talk about War of the Ring," I was just like, "What's the point? I'm not going to convince you. I already know this."
No, you have convinced me to a certain extent because I do miss the narrative playing for fun style, and I think that that's part of what a lot of the conversation has been revolving around in the last few weeks. Whether it's on the Facebook paper, whether it's on your blog, or whether it's in just our community conversations, is just this kind of lost love of playing for the love of playing. You know, like my Talarin army, for instance, I'm building that out of pure fluff, and it's changed over the years, but I'm not building it to be competitive. I'm building it to be a real, true Talarin army. And there's a lot of people out there who hold to that, and they play in tournaments with this idea of, I'm going to play a fluff army, and hey, if I win, if I roll the dice and I roll boxcars, I'm going to end out on top. And I'm going to win that tournament. It's going to be that one time in my life that I said, like, yeah, I played the fluff army and luck was on my side. And I won at the end of the day. But it just, like I had mentioned before, it doesn't appeal to the current environment that we live in for wargaming. And that's why I feel that War of the Ring is just going to be continually amalgamated into something different and new every time.
Yeah, I am
like,
curious
do you
what
not
happened.
Worry about the fact that the next edition of this, when The Hobbit comes out, is just going to go right back to the shit it was before?
No. I think they realize they've got two games on their head. The interesting thing is, online community wise, the strategy battle game has got tons and tons and tons of people. Like, they've got 5 years of developing this game and trying pushing it hard. And yeah, they don't live in North America, and I get that. But
so what you're saying is they're like furries. I apologize to the furry enthusiasts who listen to the show. No, no, no. And yes, yes, I see where you're going.
And I mean, and that's kind of the genius of the game. The interesting thing is they made it so it's backwards and forwards compatible. That's an interesting thing that they've done. They've made it so that you could take all your stuff that you own from War of the Ring and go play strategy battle games. You could take all your strategy battle game stuff, buy four times as much, and then play War of the Ring.
Sure.
So that is kind of cool. So I'm not too worried. I think my bigger fear is them deciding that War of the Ring, who they never gave a decent chance to, they're, you know, I'm scared of them pulling a Fox Network thing where, you know, they're like, oh, your mid-season replacement, the sky's limited. Oh, hey, you know what? That 11 o'clock in the morning sitcom show that we gave you for Tuesday mornings, that's not working out. You're not getting the crowd that, you know, we wanted, so we're canceling. You know, I'm scared that that's going to happen.
Right.
They're just going to be like, well, we totally didn't give
it's
you a chance.
It's the numbers game. It's the numbers game.
But well, I can't see that because
I've worked
lawyers.
In corporate life, in a corporate job, in corporate life for a very, very long time to know that corporate foresight is 6 months. And that six-month timeline, if you're not seeing instant performance, they throw away the plan that they had before. They change the plan, and then they wait 6 months. But any real good plan takes a good 9 months to actually see any sort of results from. So, I mean, War of the Ring has been going for quite a long time. It is, honestly, slowly building a fan base. And I think yeah. that's kind of the most interesting thing about War of the Ring is I honestly expected it to fall off completely when it kicked in. But it's been 2 years now yeah. since War of the Ring. 2 years now since War of the Ring, and it is actually steadily building. So what we really need to kind of wait and see is whether the bureaucracy of the... or I'm going to go ahead and go Star Wars on this. The bureaucracy of... How will the regional government gain control without the bureaucracy?
Thanks, Governor Tarkin. Grand Moff.
You're welcome. But it comes down to just like, what are the politics between the movie studios and everything else?
Yeah,
like,
no,
could
no,
this become an amazing game? You know what? I'll hope for it, but I'm going to be Johnny Bandwagon and wait until it's really popular before I devote my time to it. Because right now, Warhammer is on the rise. And like you said, when you had posted before about Warhammer 40,000 gamers, it's steadily declining. And unless Games Workshop really finds some magical equilibrium for Warhammer 40,000 gamers, Warhammer is going to continue in 8th edition for another 2 years.
I think the
years.
Problem is Warhammer 40K is a card game now.
Oh, fuck. It's rock, paper, scissors. We say it over and over again.
It's Magic the Gathering. Is you build your list. I mean, the ability to be good at Magic is...
Find the net list. Because Magic the Gathering is the perfect metagame example.
Yeah. Like I think winning 40K... I mean, this is rich coming from me, but winning 40K is just a matter of...
Thank you for that.
Yeah, it's just a matter of like, oh, it's very easy for anyone to do. I think it just comes down to willpower. If you want to do it, you just find the right list.
Well, I think Terry's blog, she talked about that recently. Did you read Terry's?
Yeah, I did.
She talked about that recently, and that's kind of what spurned some of the future topics that we're going to have here on the show. But... I think we'll just leave it at that. I think
we've overtalked by about a good 10 minutes, but
well,
yeah,
we were aiming for a half hour. Fuck that.
Yeah, so I didn't want to open too big of a can of worms when I talked about how easy it is for anyone to win. But at 40K, it is. It really is. Like anyone can win, provided that you've got the willpower to do, to just be surrender yourself to making that list and being smart enough to find those combos. I really yeah. think that. Now, does everyone do
well,
that?
You've
no,
always
no.
Been a proponent of hating combos. Oh, anybody sure brings have. Up the word combo and you cringe.
Well, I punch children.
Cats have no place to hide. Kittens.
But I mean, I also get it. It's not because they're all the terrible things. I just know my brain isn't wired that way. So I'm just like, no, I hate them because...
You worked in the industry.
Sure. Whatever. I'm drunk.
All right. That's Jaded Gamercast for this week, the bonus episode. My name is Lang.
I've said enough.
You can say your name.
My name is Kyle.
You've listened to the show enough times.
ImaginaryWars.wordpress.com.
Have a good one.
You too will be disappointed.
I'll cheers for Nathan, because he refused to be on this particular bonus episode.